Coming up today on the show, we're going to discuss the latest Disney news as well as our thoughts and opinions on Disney Plus. That's coming up next on Traveling with the Mouse. Welcome, everyone, to episode number 244 of Traveling with the Mouse for Wednesday, November the 20th, 2019. My name is Adam, and today I'm joined by John.
Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
So John's staying clear of all doors today. And Jason is staying clear of the podcast today. He has been unavoidably detained.
I think he's being detained by the Mandalorian.
That's what he's doing. He's watching Disney Plus, isn't he?
Exactly. He put us off for Disney Plus.
That's exactly what it is. He's too busy for us now that Disney Plus is out. Also, though, at the top of the show, we have two birthdays to talk about. One is Mickey Mouse. His birthday was, as of the release of this episode, a couple of days ago. And I think somebody on this podcast had a birthday on Sunday.
Yes, I almost share a birthday with Mickey Mouse.
Very close. But you do share a birthday with the Star Wars Holiday Special, as we found out.
Oh, brother. Yes, Mickey and I were born one day and 50 years apart.
Yes, and you were born on the exact same day as the Holiday Special for Star Wars.
The exact same day?
Exact same day, exact same year.
It's 41 years ago from the Holiday Special?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Same day, same year. 1978, wow. November 17th, a day that will live in infamy.
Apparently, I have all the great things that happened on the day of my birth, because also November 17th, 1978 was the day that Jim Jones got his followers to drink the Kool-Aid. So,
wow, what a day that was. Oh, my goodness.
I don't know if I want to call that a good day or not.
Well, I would say you're definitely the best thing to come out of November 17th, 1978.
Well, thank you.
It's not a high bar, unfortunately.
But. Yes, apparently.
Well, happy birthday anyway.
Thank you.
All right, so let's start with some news, and then we'll talk about Disney Plus a little bit later on, what we thought of it.
All right. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Epcot's Festival of the Arts, and they have some of the things that they're going to do this year, including a new brunch at Le Cellier. It's just around the corner, really, if you think about it. Today's episode is November the 20th.
Yeah.
And January is when Festival of the Arts begins. So, you know, we're right at 2 months away.
Yeah, January 18th. Yeah.
And it goes on for 39 days. And the event features an array of foodie delights and opportunities for guests to embrace their inner artists. So basically, it's now food and art, or should they call it art and wine? Which one's more prominent during that festival?
There's always plenty of wine flowing.
You know, it's funny because it's like every festival is truly food and wine. They just add something to it. Like this time, it's food and wine and art.
Yeah. They just change the theme a little bit. There's art, there's gardening, then there's just food and wine, and then there's holidays.
It's like it's the food and wine flower and garden edition, or versus the food. First, we have the food and wine art edition.
Basically, yeah.
So this year, as I was just saying, they have a Le Cellier brunch being added. It's a prefix bounty each Saturday and Sunday in a relaxing Canadian chateau. Reservations will be required, of course. They're going to have a Green Landing family play zone where Wally and Eve invite the entire family to enjoy a lush green environment built for exploring. Photo ops with Peter Pan storybook installation by the United Kingdom Pavilion, where the guests can flap their fins in Mermaid Lagoon or get their pirate on at Skull Rock. Grab a paintbrush and add color to a wall mural along World Showcase Plaza. Join Figment's Brush with the Masters. Marvel at and purchase works by Disney iconic artists and display throughout World Showcase. Watch visiting artists as they create new pieces from Disney-inspired works to creative art across diverse mediums. Create festival-inspired t-shirts and candles. And that's all we have right now.
I was looking up the details of that brunch at Le Cellier. It is $67 a person, plus tax and gratuity. So that's not including tax or gratuity. And if you're on the dining plan, it's still two entitlements, no discounts whatsoever. And it's only available Saturdays and Sundays during the Festival of the Arts. So, it sounds cool, but...
It doesn't sound cool for the wallet.
Yeah. Your wallet will hate you for eating this. But, I mean, some of the food looks really cool. So, cheddar cheese soup, of course. Avocado toast. You get entrees like spiced corned beef hash, Le Cellier eggs benedict, or cinnamon roll French toast bread pudding. Wow. Cinnamon roll, French toast, bread pudding, all one thing. That's amazing. It also comes with maple creme brulee or coffee and donuts. So, gosh, you can't even just get all that stuff. You have to get either or for $67. Wow. That's steep for brunch.
Well, maybe it'll be a quality brunch.
Sounds good. I just don't think it's $67 worth plus tax and gratuity. But anyway. Something new that came out this week. This is a really short story, but the new poster that came out for Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway was released earlier this week, and it shows Mickey and Minnie scuba diving, essentially, or I would say they don't really have tanks on, they're just like snorkeling underneath a train full of us. Looks like Goofy ran us into the ocean or something. A train full of people under the water.
So this is a attraction where they're bringing back the idea of the guests being tortured at the end of the ride, a la Mr. Toad.
Right.
Except you're going to drown this time.
So instead of getting run over by a train, you're on the train that runs into the ocean.
I'm starting to notice some similarities, like they're ripping something off.
Similarities.
You're going to rip off Toad. It's just Mickey's Wild Ride now is what it is.
Mickey and Minnie's Wild Ride.
That's pretty much what it is.
Runaway Railway.
Just without saying it.
So, I don't know, interesting poster, but doesn't, I hope, tell us that we're going to be drowning in this attraction, but maybe we're going to visit an underwater scene in this attraction.
I'm beginning to wonder if we're going to make it. I mean, spring could mean, like, right on up to what, June 20th, right? So,
right.
I'm wondering.
June 19th, when this is opening.
It's possible.
Yeah. It could very well be. I'm thinking by Memorial Day this will be open. I'm hoping. I mean, good Lord. Hopefully before that. But
by the way, I know we discussed, you know, about the space restaurant. I think, wasn't it last week? And we said winter 2019, but I don't think it said 2019. I just think it said winter. So.
Well, at one point it did say winter 2019.
I think they dropped the 2019 off, though.
Maybe they did.
They're just like winter.
Maybe they did. Just some winter. It may not even be this winter. Just a winter.
I can say if it, because, you know, it depends on how you interpret that. Winter 2019 could have meant like they're, you know, 9 months behind already. So, so how about we move into the fact that the NBA experience is doing so well that they are offering annual pass holder and DVC discounts.
Yeah, that's a great sign. It's always a good sign.
And they're being offered through March of 2020. Discounted tickets may now be purchased. They're normally priced at $34 for adults and $29 for children. Annual pass holders and DVC members can now purchase adult tickets for $19 with $14 tickets available for children. The offer is available from November the 15th, so it's going on now, folks, to March 31st, with tickets valid through December the 31st. So not only, I mean, they're selling it between now and March, but the tickets you buy are going to be valid for the rest of next year, pretty much. That's how much confidence they have in the ability to for this attraction right now, sounds like. Right. So,
wow. So $34 regular price, that to me seems way overpriced for what you get. Even $19 seems overpriced to me for what you get.
Yeah, $34 for adults, $29 for children. So they are knocking $15 off, though, for the discount. Yeah. That's pretty steep.
To me, I think that's what the regular price should be, is probably the $19 or whatever.
You know, the NBA experience, though, it's just so bizarre. I mean, I still keep up with basketball somewhat, but I got to be honest. I feel like overall, I'm in kind of, I don't think the majority of the Disney goers or families really care anything about this experience. And I don't know why whoever thought up of this. I'm beginning to wonder if, like, Bob Iger has, like, some connection with the NBA, truthfully, because did they do this, he showed up for the opening. I mean, that's...
He does. I've heard he's a big NBA fan, so I think this is probably something he wanted to do or doing as a favor to somebody.
Yeah, well...
And it's going to go under probably in the next year, so...
Yeah, it's not going to go down as one of his best business decisions, I'm afraid, so...
Yeah. It's probably a favor he owed to somebody.
This is one that he's going to include in his next book, depending on how this one turns out. His post-CEO book.
Right.
In a couple of years.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's just jump to some of the stuff from the Christmas party, since the Christmas parties are well underway now. Space Mountain has an overlay for the Christmas party, which to me, I watched the video of it. It looks very trippy. So there's Christmas music playing, sort of like techno Christmas music, and then you've got like these weird lights flickering, and it's sort of trippy. It's all the only way I can describe it from what I saw.
Trippy.
You see the track, and then you don't see the track, and the lights are flashing, and you hear weird Christmas music. I don't know. I think I would like the pitch black Space Mountain versus the weird strobe light Christmas party music, but... Mad Tea Party has the teacups has a Christmas overlay. Looks pretty cool. And of course, they live stream the Christmas fireworks. Did you get a chance to see those yet? The Christmas Minnie's Wonderful Christmas Time fireworks.
Well, other than the practice run that I saw from the road, other than that, when they were testing them,
I didn't find it to be that extraordinary. But they did play the Paul McCartney Wonderful Christmas Time song, not the actual Paul McCartney version, but the song itself. They played music from it several points during the show. So I thought was cool. So
at least they didn't include it.
Yeah, I thought that was neat. And then, play other stuff and fireworks. The night that they did the live stream, it was raining and the smoke kind of just stayed in the air. So you couldn't really see anything. After a while, you couldn't even see the castle. It was so foggy and smoke everywhere. So it didn't really play that well on the live stream, unfortunately. But anyway, that's the new stuff for the Christmas party this year. I think it's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to check that one out, the finished product. Because, like I said, I just saw it driving 60 miles an hour.
Right. And I'll have to watch it when it's not raining on a video or something when it's not raining.
All right, so let's go into something else that folks will be interested in, especially listeners of our podcast, I would think, when it comes to the My Disney Experience app.
Yes.
And the update that just recently came out. We noticed that the app had changed and the updates were rolled out. And some of the aspects that changed for whatever reason, probably would make it a little harder to pull FastPass. That's basically what we said. I mean, it'll make it a little more challenging than before. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I would say modifying more than anything is the on the app.
Modifying is the difficult part.
Yeah.
And we can all thank Adam because he decided to, say, hey, this one thing doesn't work for me. So
we need to
update it.
I did submit feedback to My Disney Experience on the app, and my complaint was with the iPhone, because the refreshing FastPass times, you had to switch alternating times. You couldn't, like on iPhone, and again, it was because on your Android phone, not that long ago, you were showing me and we were looking at it, and you were pushing the same time over and over again, and it was refreshing. The iPhone didn't do that, so I put that in as a feedback, hey, I want this to work that way, and it does now with this new update.
As long as you're searching.
Right, they changed all kinds of other things that I don't like, but they did fix that issue with iPhone, so.
Yeah, I wish they would have just left the modifying as it was, because that would have been much better.
Yeah, modifying, because, if you can't find the time you want for an attraction, at least give me some alternatives for something else, but they don't do that in the current version of that. So hopefully enough feedback, negative feedback, maybe they'll change that. But I don't know. I looked on the website the other day, and it's still the Modify is the same way as it used to be on the website. The app is what's different right now, so I don't know.
So would it be advantageous to go through the web version on your phone? No, probably not.
Probably not, because it'd probably be way worse than the app, I'm sure. Way slower. It'd
probably
way
be clunkier. A little slower. Yeah.
Yeah.
However, there are other things that go along with the app. For instance, bringing guests away to opt into Service Your Way program through the app itself. As a part of this service, guests can decline room service in exchange for a Disney gift card.
Now, that I like a lot.
With amounts varying depending on the length of stay, this gift card will be delivered electronically in exchange for forfeiting regular daily room service. Previously, guests had to visit the front desk in order to opt into this program, but now you can do it from the app.
Yeah.
So
I like that a lot, because I would totally do this. We don't normally get room service every day. I don't see the need most of the time. So we usually opt out at least, you know, if we're going for like 5 days, 2 or 3 of those days we'll opt out of getting room service. So.
And then guests can also opt into the direct to room program, which I don't really see where this is any different, but which allows guests to bypass the front desk and go right to their room after checking in online. Well, I thought you could do that already, because I've done that like every visit for the last, I don't know how long.
Yeah, I can't think of the last time I went to the front desk to check in.
Yeah. It says, while this service has been available in the app for years now, additional features and a different interface have been introduced. Also, the app saw an update to the landing page for each resort hotel, bringing even more information about the hotel you're staying at right at your fingertips. Yeah, I don't get what the difference is, because checking in, I thought that was checking in online. Like, you got to forego the front desk anyway.
Yeah.
I made that comment. It's been several years now. I think it was 2015, whenever we were on our baby moon.
Right.
I was like, I never even saw the front desk of the yacht club. I don't even think, the only time I passed it was, you know, on my way out the door. That was pretty much it. I think pretty much ever since the app, the only time I've been to the front desk was for Magic Bands, either having to get one that's been lost, having to get a replacement, or having to get one to work. I think that's pretty much it. The only other time was the Polynesian. Apparently, they want you to go to the front desk at the Polynesian, because the online check-in apparently doesn't work there, because it seems like Adam and I had the same experience.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they fixed it by now, because that was about 3 years ago. Yeah. But yeah, that was...
That's very odd that we both had the same hotel. It's the only time we've had it
months
happen.
Months apart. Yeah, it was just a few months apart. And both happened.
Like, well, I didn't get my text. Like, oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't need any... Didn't even get the room type I booked.
I was going to say, that's because we didn't want you to see what room we gave you.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much why they did it for me. Because they stick me in this room and didn't say a word. And I'm like, you didn't think I would notice? I'm looking at the pool, not the castle, which is what I paid for. But anyway.
Yeah.
That's another story for another day.
Yeah. I didn't even get the same building. I specifically asked for a room, and I didn't even get the same building.
Yeah,
whenever I did it. So
I requested either. Anyway,
yeah,
they made it right. That's the important thing. So let's hop on out to California and talk about the closure that's going to happen next year, because the Indiana Jones Adventure is going to close for a major overhaul / refurbishment in 2020. Yeah. 2020. Yeah,
it's not going to be down for that long.
Yeah.
Just 20.
Just so next year it'll be down, because the attraction is turning 25 years old next year.
There we go.
So I guess they're doing something for...
It says major overhaul, though, or major refurb.
Yeah. So they want to do that. So the permit, it says that they have the scope of work described as removing and replacing the set bridge to include steel structure, rock work, and planks. The show set bridge, of course, is the infamous bridge that has tried to trick guests into collapsing for 24 years. Yeah, I remember going over that thing.
So after 25 years, it's not really a trick. It's a threat now. That's why they're having to do this refurb.
It's actually a rickety bridge. They need to fix it.
Yeah. It could potentially fall apart. So they're deciding to shut down for a little while and fix it.
Yeah.
An attraction not too far away from there had issues with a bridge just recently, so.
Oh, yes. A walkthrough attraction. So maybe all the bridges at Disneyland are getting fixed.
Maybe so this triggered that.
Yeah. Somebody hates the bridges at Disneyland.
He hates these bridges.
I guess so.
Stay away from the bridges.
So 25 years that attraction is, so next year.
Hard to believe. Actually, it's hard for me to believe that's all. Just 25 years.
Yeah. It's a good ride. Seems
like that one's been around for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's coming up on 22 years for the dinosaur.
Gah. Yeah, I guess it is. So it was not long after. So I want to discuss something that's more, we call this the news and rumors, right? Mm. So I'm going to discuss something that's a little more leaning toward the rumor side than actual news. And that is that Bombardier,
yeah,
they claim a new model order that could be for Walt Disney World. We don't know for a fact that it is for Walt Disney World, but they have, I guess, claimed a project that could, this of the scope and size that could be related to Disney. Hmm. But we don't know this as a fact. It's just suspicious, we'll say. That's why we consider it in the rumor part.
Yeah.
Let's just go back. Back in April of 2018, Disney had been saying that a new fleet, there were some internal sources supposedly, so again, we're not going to say Disney said that.
Right, it wasn't official.
Said that a new fleet was ordered from Bombardier of Canada. That's the same company that built the Mark VI for Walt Disney World. Mm-hmm. Only one of a few companies in the Western Hemisphere with the capability to build mass transit class monorails. And a short time after that, legendary Imagineer Bob Gurr, who was instrumental in the design of most Disney monorails, reiterated that very same information. Therefore, you know, of course, it raised some eyebrows. But as we mentioned then, Bob Gurr, not really currently with the company, so
yeah,
he doesn't really have the inside information that he once did, unless it was while he was filming the Imagineering story.
Yeah, it could be.
Because he apparently had a lot of access then.
Right. Exactly, yeah, he did.
As we've seen.
He's pretty heavily featured, yeah.
I don't know. It seems as though they have a client. It's undisclosed at the moment. It says while the North America client could theoretically be a city municipality looking to improve infrastructure or any other populous tourist destination, the order could also be for Walt Disney World. So we'll watch and see if something comes about with that recently. But again, at this point, I would just put it in the rumor stack and say that we'll just, that should be the last time we mention it until we get something more official on it. But it is interesting, the size of the project,
yeah,
being one that could be related to Walt Disney World. So,
well, how many monorails are in North America? Because it does say undisclosed customer North America. So we know it's either Canada, Mexico, or the U.S. So how many monorail systems are currently running? You know, Las Vegas has one. Disney World has one. But, I mean, is there really a lot of monorails in North America? I don't know of a lot of them.
Right. Again, unless it's, and the thing is also, you notice right there, it doesn't list the number of cars either.
Yeah, they're trying to keep it under wraps for a reason, which I think, you know, could point to Disney. It's definitely possible.
And I would point out that there's also two undisclosed projects in North America listed. Yeah. Just say that.
One for $104 million, right? The other one. So
actually, it's $104.
Yeah, $104. So. Yeah. That'll get a new patch of carpet.
And the other is $247. So.
Yeah. So if this is Disney, why the heck are they refurbing the monorail green and monorail silver in the current fleet? Like, why did they do that?
Yeah, good point. Why would they go to that trouble if they plan on replacing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they don't plan on replacing all of them?
And by the way, it's not because those were like the worst two, because I've been on other monorails that were in far worse shape than those two were. I took pictures one time of the whole ceiling housing was like falling apart and like took photos of it. And like, this is like acceptable for Disney?
Right.
But that wasn't on monorail silver or green. So,
and The refurbs on them, though, could be necessary patchwork in the meantime, though.
It could be.
It doesn't. Because it's not like they're doing,
yeah,
like, major overhaul of it by any means.
Yeah.
They're basically making it. They're sprucing it up.
They're sprucing up the interior quite a bit. The outside looks virtually the same, and I'm assuming that, although they have reported it's been a smoother ride, so I think they replaced the brakes, is what I've heard, on them. So it's been smoother braking and stopping at stations. So seems like they poured a decent amount of money into it, though, to be just replacing them again. So I don't know.
I've often wondered when it comes to monorails, how well is the concrete track holding up after, you know, almost 50 years now?
Yeah. Well, I've seen pieces of, I think at the Grand Floridian station, there's chunks of cement out of that people have taken pictures of. I don't think they're in great condition in some places, yeah. And you can see the wear on them as far as, like, the coloring. They look very dirty and, you know, for the most
right.
part, yeah.
I mean, you would think that's something that they get checked out periodically, if not regularly, the how, you know, sturdy the monorail track itself is, you would think.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's concrete, but possibly patch these little places up that that fall off. Like put some new cement there or something.
I don't know. It doesn't appear. I've seen pictures of like chunks out of the cement.
I mean, you would think a lot of, even if there's roadways that have concrete on theirs, like there's some stretches of highway and interstate that have concrete in certain places. Mm-hmm. I think it's supposed to be more durable.
I'm so sure it'll hold up for a while, but at some point it's going to deteriorate.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we could talk about some more news and stuff all day long, but I want to get into Disney
Plus.
How about you?
Yes. Let's plus it up.
Disney Plus is
fantastic.
Like all I watched lately when I watch any television, pretty much. I didn't exactly watch a lot of television in general before, although it's kind of cut into the time that I would watch something on YouTube. That's pretty much it.
Right.
although I did still watch a couple of Netflix things, yeah.
Oh, okay. So you still watch Netflix?
Yeah, I still have it currently.
Yeah, I do too.
I picked it back up to watch El Camino, the Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I guess you could call it spinoff sequel, sort of, where it kind of picks up on Jesse's story after the events at the ending of Breaking Bad. So I did watch it for that. Or I picked it back up for that mainly. But I mean, there's a couple of other things on there that I still like to watch. And some of the stuff that's not yet streaming on Disney Plus, you can still get on Netflix. So if you want to watch that, that way you can technically have the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And that's not a pun on Hannah Montana either.
Right.
Which is also available on Disney Plus. What would you say, Adam, is the most favorite thing you've watched so far?
It's probably a tie between Mandalorian and the Imagineering story.
So both originals.
Yeah, those are the two that I gravitate to. And I don't remember if I mentioned this on the show, but my quest for the next like 6 weeks, or actually now it's down to like 4 weeks, isn't it? Until the Rise of Skywalker comes out, I want to rewatch all canon Star Wars films. I think I'm going to put Rogue One in there, but not Solo. I probably won't watch Solo again. But I'm planning to watch every Star Wars film in chronological order up to Last Jedi, and then watch Rise of Skywalker when it comes out. So I've started doing that. I've watched Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones so far. I've gone through two of the prequels. And you know what? They're not as bad as it's been a while since I've watched them in their entirety, and there's some new things that I am appreciating about them, especially watching Palpatine's rise to power. I think that's actually something I didn't really care for when I was younger, and now I'm really fascinated by it, so I'm actually more interested in that. And, you know, trying to look past the really terrible dialogue and poor acting in some cases, and just bad directing mostly. But visually, these movies are very good still. They hold up visually, I think. So, anyway, that's another thing I'm watching. But
I was about to say, you're starting to sound like George Lucas there for a minute, the way you were talking about the films, the manner in which you were talking.
Yes. Sorry about that. No, but, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there, that that's another thing I'm doing. So that's one thing I'm using Disney Plus for, is because I don't have the prequels on Blu-ray. I only have the original trilogy on Blu-ray. So I'm actually able to watch in 4K the prequels. So,
do you remember what was the first thing you watched on day one?
I believe the very first thing I watched was Imagineering Story, I think.
Was it?
Pretty sure.
You know, last week when we did the show, it just so happened it was Veterans Day when we did the show, so it was late that night, and Disney Plus was scheduled to go on the air the next day. You know, we were kind of going back and forth talking about when the app was going to be downloaded and everything. It just so happens I happened to catch on my phone, I was awake still, it was just past midnight, and I happened to catch something that said something about a review of Noel. And I was like, a review?
Yeah.
And so it got me curious as to whether or not I could actually get the access to the app, and sure enough, I could. So there I was at like 12:30 scrolling through the Disney Plus app. And I think it actually helped releasing it that early in the morning, because I was able to go through and scroll through and not have any issues trying to find something or watch something. And of all the things, I was like, I have all this stuff to choose from. And of all the things, I don't know why, but I chose, and it was one that I enjoyed when I was a kid now. So I got to say, I chose Return to Oz to be the first thing that I watched.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, very unique choice, I'll say that. Even for myself, I kind of surprised myself with that choice.
Yeah. But
I pretty much didn't really watch it in its entirety because, you know, I started it at 12:30, so obviously I fell asleep on the couch during the showing of it. Right. But I think my most favorite thing that I saw the majority of the next day was error code 83 and unable to connect. Right. That was my first favorite thing in the next few hours in the morning.
Yes. And you know, it's funny, we pre-recorded last week's episode, but you mentioned that they had spotty service and the connection was bad, that kind of thing, just sort of as a joke.
I know, right?
I left it in because that's what happened.
And I said 5 hours, and I got to thinking about it. I was like, 6 a.m. when most people started watching. I was like, 11. And it's almost true.
Yeah, it's almost exactly right.
It was almost exactly right. I was like, God, what about that?
It was the future you saw.
Apparently.
So you have the force.
The force is strong with this one.
Apparently so.
So,
yeah. So what's going to happen in the next 5 hours? What are the lottery numbers for tonight? Tell me.
I wish I knew.
Anyway.
Because that would definitely change what I would be doing afterwards, or at least after the next 2 weeks. So I thought it would be kind of interesting to go through and see like how things are getting rated of the original material that Disney is releasing. How many of the original stuff have you watched? I know you just said The Mandalorian and The Imagineering Story. Have you watched anything outside of that?
Yeah, I've watched The World According to Jeff Goldblum. I watched two episodes of that. And honestly, not as exciting as I was hoping it would be. I used to watch, and I think it still comes out, is the Cooking with Jeff on the Funny or Die, I think it's on. Uh-huh. And they're really shorter, you know, like 10-minute things where he just has a celebrity guest and he goes to the Kroger, his local Kroger, I guess, and talks to the people and cooks a dish with a celebrity guest. And it's actually incredibly funny and entertaining. I was hoping it would be more along those lines.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
But the show is like, you know, the first one was about sneakers. And the second one was about ice cream. And he kind of just goes deep on that. And it's still fun to watch because it's Jeff Goldblum. But it's a little bit more, I don't know, it's a little bit more reality show driven. It's not just put the camera on Jeff and let him go. It's more like this is set kind of things that we're wanting him to do and places we sending him. It's not exactly as free flowing as I would like for it to be, because just watching him talk is funny to me. But they're trying to force things to happen by putting him in different situations, and it's like, okay, not as good to me. But
right.
But that's the only other original I think I've watched so far. Other things, I've just watched old shows and stuff.
Okay, yeah, there's been several older things for sure that I've watched. But given the new the originals, I was curious as to what they, how they're being received. And so I looked up Rotten Tomatoes, and I have the critic score and the audience score on each of the new original series that they have available out there. As I just mentioned earlier, I saw that there was a review of Noelle out at the time that what triggered as to whether or not I was, what turned me on to, I guess, trying to see if Disney Plus was available, and sure enough.
Isn't Bill Hader in that?
So, he is, but you know what's funny is I on all of the, like in the original, what do you say, like, I don't want to call them posters, but the original media or whatever that was put out for that, it shows both of them. Mm-hmm. It shows both Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader. But, like, ever since then, and the icon on Disney Plus and everything, it just shows her, and I don't know what that is about for some reason. I mean, it's like she just all of a sudden, they just, like, they didn't want to put Bill Hader in the headline at all for some reason. I have no idea.
Featured in the movie? I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So yeah. Personally, I haven't. I haven't chosen to watch it. But
maybe I'll watch it.
The critics give it a 43%, which is actually below the good mark, I guess. They consider about 50% right in there to be when it's still in the...
Yeah, not completely rotten tomato.
Yeah, it's not going rotten until it's at least 49%, I guess.
Yeah.
However, the audience goes a good bit better than that. They go 66% as far as what they think about it. So, I mean, I know there's not a ton of votes in on these yet at all, but Encore, the one with, what's her name?
Kristen Bell.
Yes, her. Mm-hmm. That's the one. The critics give it a 60%, and the audience so far has it at 100%.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, at this point.
Interesting.
Right. So two pretty big differences there on those. The live action Lady and the Tramp.
Mm, yeah.
We have a 63% from the critics, and a 64% from the audience.
Now, you watched this, didn't you? You said you had some thoughts on this, didn't you?
I did. We watched it Sunday.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't think it was bad. There's aspects about it that I liked, aspects about it that I didn't particularly like. I don't really get why they decided to make Jock a female. I just don't see why they felt that was necessary. Unless they just wanted to add more female characters, because I mean, like, you know, Jock in the original movie was a Scottish Terrier, but it was voiced by a dude, and like they, in this one, they made it Jock, like short for Jacqueline or Jacqueline.
Okay.
So I don't know why they felt that necessary, but okay, because they didn't really have that many lines in the first place. I mean, neither him or Sam Elliott was voicing the Bloodhound, but that was interesting having him. It was kind of like a perfect like mesh there for him. It's the original story to a degree, but it's not like a carbon copy like we've seen with, say, for instance, Aladdin, the live action, or even The Lion King. They changed up some of the lines a little bit and a little bit of the what happens and things like that, but they stayed in the ballpark of the original. They have, from my count, two of the original songs in there. Maybe there's more. There might have been a third. The diverse cast, that was done well. It was done in a good light. Overall, like I said, it was not bad. I think I still prefer the cartoon, but I mean, it's something that I enjoyed. I enjoyed it more than some of the live action ones I've come across thus far. So
what would you give it? What would your ranking be of it?
I'm probably about in the same category as the audience this time. The 64 is probably, I would put it in that range.
6 out of 10.
I would say it's, I would say, I mean, it's kind of middle of the road for me.
3 out of 5.
I think some people complain about the, like, they let them loving the old song or whatever, but you know, you got the cartoon for that if you really want to see it in its original. So, you know, go see that.
Right.
Take this for what it is. And I thought for a retelling, since they didn't try to do it word for word, I actually liked that part better, that they tried to stray somewhat, a little more so than, say, like I said, the Aladdin and the Lion King one.
Right,
so
where they didn't almost copy exactly. As closely as they could. Okay.
Let's see. The World According to Jeff Goldblum actually gets a 73% from the critics, and it didn't have a rating from the audience yet at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. So, it's not, I guess somewhere in the 70s is probably appropriate for it. I hope it gets better as it goes on. Just let Jeff Goldblum be Jeff Goldblum. That's what I'm trying to say.
For a minute there, I thought you were talking about his age.
What? Let himself go.
Somewhere in the 70s.
Oh, so actually, he's getting there, isn't he?
Almost.
He looks good for his age, though.
Forky asked a question. Have you seen this little...
I actually did, yeah. I've seen... How many of them are there? Because I've seen two different ones.
I think there's only two so far.
I've seen those two.
As of this past week.
They're good.
It's like, yeah, what is money and what is a friend? Yeah. The only two that I know of.
Yeah, they're good.
You know, they're very short, but I mean they're entertaining.
Yeah, they're like 4 or 5 minutes at the most. Yeah, they're good though. They're very funny.
Yeah. 78% rating from the critics, only 43% from the audience thus far though.
Really?
I don't know if maybe they figured they were short and pointless, maybe, and I don't know.
Yeah. It's like those Mater's Tall Tales from the Cars movies. Those are funny to me. Yeah. I like them. They're cool little short things to watch.
Yeah, like I said, I thought they've been great so far. So
I've enjoyed it.
I got no problems with there. The Marvel Hero Project, that one, is getting an 89% from the critics and an 82% from the audience. Mm. So it's getting pretty high marks thus far.
I haven't watched that yet.
And then, of course, the one that's getting the most buzz, at least, The Mandalorian, is getting a whopping 90% from the critics and a 94% from the audience, which, aside from Encore, is the highest rated one by the audience.
I would agree with that.
Thus far.
I would.
And then last but not least, The Imagineering Story. It has a 100% rating from the critics and an 80% rating from the audience.
Hmm, that's interesting to me.
Well, it's kind of hard to say because over time, I feel like that one will change. All of these will probably change to some degree because it's just not enough reviews out there yet, except for the critics have probably had the most reviews put up. But the audience, they'll start voicing their opinion. Yeah,
trickling in.
On there. Yeah, as time goes on. Like I said, there's not even a rating for the audience for the world, according to Jeff Goldblum so far. So, you know, it's not a ton of people that's done their ratings on it yet, though. So
yeah, to me though, the Mandalorian has a lot of rewatchability too, because there are a lot of hidden kind of Easter eggs in there. I had to rewatch because I knew in the first episode, the very beginning, the first bounty, I knew I recognized that voice and that actor, and I realized after looking it up, it was Horatio Sanz. So I thought that was interesting. There's definitely a lot of cool hidden Easter eggs to look for and a lot of fun things in the show. And I love the music. The way it's done is very cool. It's just overall incredibly well-made show. They spared no expense, I hear.
To borrow a line from John Hammond.
Yeah. So they've spent a lot of money on it, but I think they're getting their money's worth out of it because... Man, Star Wars fans are coming out like saying, hey, this is like better than anything since Return of the Jedi is what they're saying. I've heard that so many times.
I've made the comment that it's the best thing they've done since they started doing Star Wars, since Disney started doing Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean,
I could agree with that, for the most part.
I mean, just 1 hour's worth thus far of The Mandalorian has, for me, outweighed the first two movies they did as far as enjoyment and watchability.
There's not a lot of dialogue from The Mandalorian, especially. He doesn't talk much, but there's so much said visually, even though you don't see his face either. I think it's pretty impressive. And the show's, the second episode's only like 30 minutes. The first one, I think, is 40 minutes long, something like that. So these aren't, I was expecting, 50 minutes per episode, but they're just sort of, whenever the story's over, it's over. They don't try to force
it. Yeah, it's run at a half hour or so.
Yeah, they're not trying to force long scenes to make it an hour show or something. They're just like, this is the story for this episode. It's when it's done, it's done. They're not trying to prolong or stretch out things too much. Yeah. It's well-paced is what I'm trying to say.
Well, in the first two, there's actually been a decent amount of action in both episodes, too.
Yeah, I mean, who hasn't thought of, if I had a sand crawler toy, I guess we're spoiling, I don't want to get into, should we get into spoilers or no? Maybe I shouldn't. The second episode is something like, if I had the toys that are involved in this episode, this is something I would have like played as a kid, like, doing something like this. It's very much like a sandbox, so to speak, of, you know, it's cool the way they're doing it. It's stuff you would have never seen from characters that you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess we can go ahead and say, you know, you can put a spoiler alert ahead of this if you want to, okay. But Jawas, yeah, yeah. It's getting a different a look at the Jawas and their way of doing things a little bit. You get a little bit more of what they do.
A little more in-depth on it.
And bargaining.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, other than them being scavengers.
And for all those people out there, I'm not going to spoil this either if you haven't seen it, but the people out there who think Disney's only after the merchandising, there is something that I don't know that's available right now from The Mandalorian that should be available, because they would sell like hotcakes if they sold a plush or something of this creature thing that's in the episodes.
This creature thing.
I won't say who yet.
The baby?
Yes. The 50-year-old baby. Oops.
The 50-year-old baby.
Those would sell very quickly if they sell. I mean, they probably are selling them. I haven't seen them. If they are.
You know what I thought was interesting is, you know how sometimes in the Disney movies, like the animated movies, how the person voicing the character, how they kind of draw them into the character a little bit, like they use some of their facial features in the character itself, like the genie, for instance. You know, they had Robin Williams in mind, I guess, whenever they drew him. The creature or the person, whatever you want to call him, that kind of aids the Mandalorian in the first two episodes, being voiced by Nick Nolte. I like look at that creature, and now that I know that it's Nick Nolte that's voicing him, and I see Nick Nolte. I kind of see, like, this is what Nick Nolte would look like if he was whatever race this creature is, whatever he is.
Yeah, and you know? I can't remember the name of the type of creature it is, but they are the same that are on Cloud City.
Yeah.
In the junk room or whatever you want to call it.
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's another callback to other Star Wars movies, yeah.
You know, one thing I didn't really look into as far as the story goes, do they give an indication as to what the time period is?
Yeah, it is post-Return of the Jedi. I believe it's 5 years or so after Return of the Jedi, the events of Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
Which is very cool because you see, and this might be a minor spoiler, but there's remnants of the Empire, fractions of the Empire still around.
Yeah, I wonder why they didn't think of making a series that involves, you know, more of that stuff. I guess it's kind of hard to, because you'd have to include characters that are much older.
Yeah.
The people who acted them now.
Yeah, I imagine if they could, they would have gone to, you know, not that far after Return of the Jedi to do The Force Awakens, or probably wouldn't be called The Force Awakens, but obviously with Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill being 30 years old or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's one of those things you got to be really careful if you want to go the route of recasting, if you wanted to do that, so.
Right. You know, you can't recast this cast of Star Wars. You just can't do that.
And so. Apparently nowadays you can just put their face on someone younger, I guess.
Yeah, well, they have to. You think Harrison Ford would ever agree to that? No, he would never.
Well, not for less than $50 million. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, should we talk a little about the Imagineering story? What we thought of it?
Sure. I mean, first two episodes, they are what I expect. What I like about this story, other than that we're getting kind of like in depth into how everything came to be, really, as far as Walt and his vision for the company and for the parks. Outside of that, what's really neat is getting to see all this footage that has, some of which has been released before in different capacities, being for the first time in a, you know, digital format and a little bit cleaner format. High quality format. I mean, like this stuff, like, you know, Jason was talking about seeing the pirates in the truck, and I was thinking, you know, I'd seen that 30 years ago on the Showtime at Disneyland or whatever it was called. I can't remember the one where they went through and showed, it was a Walt Disney Presents or something like that special from way back when, that we saw it on the Disney Channel when they replayed it
in the 80s.
Yeah. They replayed it in the 80s and 90s.
those specials I've had new life breathed into them from YouTube. You know, they're all over YouTube. Yeah. But again, the quality, not very high.
Right. On YouTube, it's in its original format, basically. Yeah. Or even sometimes a little bit worse because it's, because it's on videotape and being converted to YouTube format. But, I mean, like I said, footage was shown in those things, but to see that cleaned up for the first time since that time period, you know, stuff that was originally out in the late 60s.
Yeah, it looks really good on Disney Plus, I gotta say, all this footage.
Speaking of stuff that's gotta be cleaned up, though, just to kind of throw this in there right quick, I haven't watched it yet, but I've put it on my watch list, is the original Mickey Mouse Club episodes.
Right, yeah, I haven't watched that in there.
I need to see what they look like on here. Right.
And I watched some of the Disneyland Through the Seasons, and that looks fantastic, too. They did a good job cleaning that up, because I watched that on YouTube as well not that long ago. And, yeah, that was the 1966 special that aired, like, a week after Walt Disney died. That was, of course, filmed way earlier in the year, but that was a cool special to watch. It's on Disney Plus, so check it out if you haven't seen it out there. But as far as Imagineering story, I mentioned this to you guys, and I really nerded out about the fact that there was unseen footage of the Epcot film that was shown here. It's a tiny, tiny clip, but I was excited to know that it existed because I read in Marty Sklar's book that he wrote two endings to the Epcot film, but I wasn't sure if the other ending actually existed, which... I mean, or is still in existence, I mean, where it could be seen, but apparently, because it's on the Imagineering story, at least a tiny portion of it, which means that it's out there somewhere, somebody has it, that they did it. So I was very excited to know that that alternate ending is out there for the somewhere. Hopefully one day it'll be released, but it was just exciting to see that it existed. So, and hopefully the Epcot film will be released.
I was going to say, we're just getting started with Disney Plus, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I hope at one point the Epcot film, you know, the 25-minute Epcot special will be put out there, too.
So is there anything in particular, like, you either went back and saw for the first time in a while, or...
Yeah.
Like a pick that you might want to recommend to somebody that they may have never heard of before that you have watched?
Well, I'll put it this way... some of the old shows that I used to love, like Tailspin and Rescue Rangers. My son really liked Rescue Rangers quite a bit, actually. And we watched an episode of Tailspin, and I was surprised at how not very good it was. It doesn't really hold up for me. Like, looking back on it, I'm like, really? This was like I loved Tailspin. And watching it now, I'm like, really? Even Rescue Rangers, to some extent, isn't as good as I remembered it being in my head, like thinking. But it's more watchable, I think, than Tailspin. At least the few episodes I've seen, you know, kind of rewatching them, I kind of, some things come back to you, but other things are like, I don't really remember some of these episodes. But those are two that I loved as a kid, and I would say, yeah, rewatch it. I also rewatched Davy Crockett and the River Pirates. Rewatched some of that, and yeah, it's, you know, there's parts of it that are like remembered from being a kid, and then there's parts that are like, this is very poorly edited movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just parts of it, and you know, where they sped up the, like, for example, when the old man, I can't remember the captain's name of the Bertha May,
Cap Cobb.
There you go, Cobb, where he falls off the, where, you know, when after Mike,
what, Finkin, like, help.
Yeah, it was like, it was sped up really badly, and it was it was very poorly done. And of course, you can tell a lot of it is shot in front of a screen and not actually out in the water, which some of it is, of course, but you can tell when they transition between a wide shot of being on the river in the boats and then up close, and it's like a very dated looking screen behind them. So the, you know, the transition, the color is very different. So it doesn't hold up as well over time, but, you know, it's stuff you remember from a kid.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, there's a couple of things for me. We went back and saw some of the live action ones like the Shaggy D.A. Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, The Ugly Dachshund. Apparently, I have a lot of Dean Jones movies in there, right, from the sounds of it.
Yeah, I started to watch Herbie the other day. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was thinking going through there, I was like, if I could rank the Herbie movies, how would I rank them? I think the original The Love Bug has to go one, but I actually like Monte Carlo probably after that.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of my favorites. I really like it a lot, too. Don Knotts, really good.
I like them all, but if I was going to rate them, I just don't know where I would fall Rides Again and Goes Bananas. I don't know where I'd rate
them. Yeah, I think Bananas was my least favorite.
The thing is, the Bananas has a lot of comedic timing in it, but, I mean, you got to think Rides Again has the guy that always played Alonzo Hawk in it as well, so that always makes for an interesting dynamic. Of course, the classic, the Country Bears.
Did you watch that?
No, actually, I haven't.
I was about to say, you actually watched it?
Although, I mean, I think I'm probably going to.
I probably should watch it, yeah.
I think I'm going to. What was another one? I'm trying to think if there's another one I saw in there. Oh, I watched The Black Hole, because I remembered it from way back when. Mm-hmm. That's another one that's kind of obscure, I guess. But the one that I just remembered seeing as a kid that I wanted to go back and see because it's been such a long time is a very obscure one called The Ghosts of Bexley Hall, which was in the early 80s.
Yes, okay.
So I went back and saw that. Oh, and a Disney, it's kind of like it was like a made-for-Disney channel almost film or movie. It was probably shown on something else, but it was on Disney at some point in time, but it's only like an hour long. And they usually showed it at Halloween during the time periods they show it. It was called Mr. Boogity. I went back and looked at it again, and it's like, I see where it was an appealing to me as a child especially, but, I mean, the effects are very dated, of course, but still, I mean, it was still kind of neat to watch. Yeah, a neat little story as far as something that's, it's like, it's a little bit spooky or scary or could be, but it's in a Disney way. It's hard to explain. Kind of like, you know, the Haunted Mansion is not really all that scary. You know, that's the best way I could know to describe it. Okay, now I got to ask this. Is there something in particular that's not currently on Disney Plus that you either are shocked at or would like to see or anything in particular?
There's one that I had heard about that I wanted to see that is not on there as far as I know, and that's The Great Locomotive Chase. Fess Parker is in it. I don't know if that'll ever be on there.
You know, there's several that came to mind. I was kind of reminded of them that I don't really know the reason why they're not on there because they're not being streamed anywhere else right now. One of them being Enchanted, if you remember that with Amy Adams. Some of these aren't being streamed right now on Disney Plus because they're currently under contract with other services. But once that runs out, it's going to be on Disney Plus. In fact, you can actually see the icon in a lot of these cases up on Disney Plus, and if you click on it, it'll say available, and it'll tell you what date that it's going to be available because it's not available yet. For instance, Coco is not available yet because it's still streaming on Netflix.
Right, right. And I think, what, Ralph Breaks the Internet?
Yeah, things like that. Up's actually not available now, believe it or not. I know it's listed there, but the reason why Up's not available now is because I really don't know why it's not available right now. It's showing like it's going to be. It says it's going to be, but it's not streaming anywhere right now, so I don't know why it's not already available.
Yeah. Also, the Ernest movies, I think they might be on Netflix.
Is that Disney, though?
Well, it was Touchstone.
Touchstone, yeah, that's true.
So
yeah, they have some other Touchstone pictures in there.
Yeah, Roger Rabbit's on there and stuff. So,
3 Men and a Baby.
Yeah,
Touchstone.
I was hoping like Ernest Saves Christmas would be on in time for Christmas, because that's one of my I love to watch that one every year. I think it was on Netflix at one point, but I don't know if it's still. I don't think it was on there last year, so I don't know. But I was surprised not to see any of them because I thought, Touchstone and stuff, they would be on there. But
yeah, Turner and Hooch is Touchstone. It's on there.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but yeah, and there's some of that. But the reason why it's not on there is because they're keeping it family, I guess. Which is, I thought this kind of odd with the choice of Avatar, because I don't know. I guess that's sort of family, but you know, like one of Sigourney Weaver's like first lines in the movie, she says, "Give me a GD cigarette," or something like that. Okay. So I'm like, okay, that's very family. Right. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was like, interesting choice. It's literally like in her first line, it says something along those lines in Avatar. So like her very first line is something along those lines. Yeah. So
Yeah, one yeah. one that I want to mention that is really good is I did watch Rocketeer again, and that's a really good movie. It's so underrated. Bruce Campbell, Jennifer Connelly, a very young Jennifer Connelly, and Timothy Dalton.
Yes. In there.
So, yeah, and of course, Alan Arkin. So, really good yes. cast and great movie. So
they have a slew of the original Muppet films in there.
Yeah, right.
They don't have the Muppets Take Manhattan for whatever reason, but they do have the original, the Muppet movie.
Yeah.
And one of my personal favorites that I always enjoyed watching as a kid, The Great Muppet Caper. I always thought that was one of the better ones. It's in there. As well as Muppet Treasure Island.
Right, yeah, I was going to say Muppet Treasure Island was one I liked a lot, too.
Yeah. I thought it weird that in the Medfield College films that they have The Computer Who Wore Tennis Shoes and The World's Strongest Man, but they don't have Now You See Him, Now You Don't. I don't know why that is. Because to me, Now You See Him, Now You Don't was actually the best of the three. And it was my favorite of the three. With the invisibility. If you remember that, Dexter Riley.
Oh, yes. Invisible. I do remember that now, yeah.
Yeah, Now You See Him, Now You Don't. That was actually, to me, in my opinion, it was the better of the films. But, I mean, they're all good. But it was. I thought it was the better of the films. But it's the one excluded thus far.
Well, you know, there's some cartoons, too, that I was expecting to see that aren't on there. Some of, like, the Goofy cartoons. There's a few, like, older Mickey and several of the classic cartoon shorts, but not some of the, not as many as I thought of, say, Goofy, Donald. There's more Mickey cartoons than anything else.
I feel like there's good choices yeah. of all of them. Some of my favorite ones that include, you know, the, I don't know what you call it, the usual trio for a while there, you know, Mickey, Goofy, and Donald together. There right. was a slew of those.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
They were good together.
Like the one where they're in the camper.
Yes, the camper one. That one's available in there. And yeah. The one where they're the ghost hunters or the ghost chasers, that one's in there. What was another one?
Now, there's a few of the Goofy, like, how-to ones, but I don't think all of them are on there, right? I mean, I feel like there was more.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen baseball, so I know it's not all of them, and I haven't seen golf either, so I know that's not
right, yeah,
there. I know
those were good, yeah.
One of the best ones, though, about skiing, it is in there. That was one of the top ones on my list as far as Goofy ones go. However, I'm kind of surprised. I haven't seen the one where he works out or lifts weights or whatever. That was one of the best ones.
That's one I was thinking of, too, yeah. I couldn't remember the name of it, but yeah, that was a really good one.
I mean, I saw the Olympic one, but I mean, I was like, why aren't they doing the ones where Goofy does the exercise?
Right.
that was like one of the best ones.
It was, yeah.
A couple of films that I was going to go through that, like I said, I'm still kind of wish they were on there, I guess, or yeah, maybe in somewhat surprised when you go through some of the obscure titles that are on there. I don't know why Angels in the Outfield didn't make the cut.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
I mean, I always enjoyed that one. I don't see why that would be excluded. Some of them I can understand why they would be excluded, but
yeah.
There was one from a long time ago, not one that was really a favorite of mine, but I just, given the era, I'm just curious as to why. It's called The Happiest Millionaire.
I do remember that, yeah, late 60s.
So that was interesting to me that it was left off.
That was one of the last ones that Walt produced.
A couple of them that's not a surprise. Song of the South, obviously, excluded.
Yeah.
Because it's been banned for several years. One that they kind of selectively left off, I'm sure, in light of his recent trial and conviction, was The Devil and Max Devlin, starring Bill Cosby.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Pretty sure there was a reason behind leaving that one out. That and the fact that it's not really a memorable film.
Yeah, it was not very good.
I mean, I remember it, but it was not exactly like, you know, one of the best ones ever of the Disney ones. So,
you know, one that I see that's on here that I haven't watched in a very long time, but I remember liking it as a kid, was Three Musketeers with Kiefer Sutherland and I think, was it Charlie Sheen?
Charlie Sheen. Yeah. Yeah. And gosh, what's that guy's name?
I know, I can't think of his name either, but he's very...
He's very good, yeah. Well, among the other ones that you're not going to see on there yet, believe it or not, the original National Treasure, it's because it's still on Netflix, even though you can add it to your watch list if you want to. It will be on it eventually, but
right.
because it's still on Netflix, it's not
I see.
Available yet. As far as Disney series, especially in recent history that they've left off, I don't know why they would leave off Sunny with a Chance, if you remember that one at all. It was 2009, 2011, and it had... Demi Lovato was the lead. in the show, and I don't know why they would, you know, given that they have like your Hannah Montana's and your Wizards of Waverly Place and those kind of shows are out there. I wonder why they would specifically leave this one out. Your Suite Life is out there as well. I mean, all those shows, all the typical, I'm thinking of all the shows that are very similar to this show, and yet they're out there, but yet this one's not. So I don't understand the reasoning behind that one. Mm. The movie Holes, it's on HBO currently, so it's not going to be on. Same way with the Mighty Ducks films. They're not on Disney Plus right now because they're also on HBO Go.
Oh, I see.
Tarzan currently on Netflix. That's why it won't be there. Some of these are stuff that you wouldn't remember. Homeward Bound is currently on HBO Go and HBO Now.
I do remember that one because that was when Michael J. Fox was one of the voices. Sally Field.
Yep.
Yeah, it was good.
It was a good movie, too.
Yeah.
Bear in the Big Blue House is not on there, and it's not streaming anywhere. And I don't know why they chose to leave it out. It was one of their properties back then, so
yeah.
Don't know the reasoning for leaving that one out. Air Bud is not anywhere. That was one of their, if you remember that one.
I do remember that.
No, that's not out there anywhere. Well, 2008's The Incredible Hulk, even though it's part of the Marvel series, it's like not part of the Disney one because it was distributed by Universal Pictures, which was different than, say, the Iron Man ones prior to Disney picking it up. I think Iron Man was Paramount, maybe? I can't remember now.
Sounds one right, of those. Yeah.
But because The Incredible Hulk was Universal Pictures back in 2008, I feel like that has a lot to do with why it won't be streaming on Disney Plus anytime soon. None of the Spider-Man movies either, by the way.
The Tobey Maguire ones or the...
No, I'm talking about the Sony Pictures ones.
Oh, this, okay.
Like Spider-Man Homecoming is not... Okay. Yeah, things like that. Although Disney was involved usually in those, but they're not on it. Of course, like Black Panther is still on Netflix. Infinity War is still on Netflix. Ant-Man and Wasp is still on Netflix.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Far From Home, again, it's not streaming anywhere at the moment. Toy Story 4 will be next month, I think it is. Oh, I think they were going to do it in December for Toy Story 4. Of course, Disney has the Deadpool stuff, but they're not likely to ever be on Disney Plus because of the nature of them.
Right.
And another one that I don't know if they'll try to do anything with, the X-Men movies, because they technically own them now, right? With 20th Century Fox, don't they own them? Anyway, I mean, what's weird is, just like I said, some that's not really streaming anywhere that they're not including for no real reason, it doesn't seem. So obviously the entire vault is not totally opened up.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a reason for some of it. Maybe it's just they couldn't get it all out for launch and it'll trickle in, or maybe there's some rights issues that we don't know about, maybe. Like, I imagine if any movie has a song in it that is licensed somewhere that they have to pay a royalty on or something, there might be an issue with it, or anything like that might be a possibility, or any other distribution company that was involved might be a holdup potentially or something like that.
True. If the listeners, if you guys have any specific Disney-related film or show that's not currently being streamed on Disney Plus that you would like to see added, I mean, you can let us know.
Yeah.
Via social media, whether that be Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. I guess you could shoot a photo of what you want it to be on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
And just make a comment of the film.
Right.
All that at TWTM Podcast. We also have a Spreadshirt store in which you can find your exclusive merchandise, TWTM merchandise. That is shop.spreadshirt.com/TWTM Podcast.
We also have a website, which is travelingwiththemouse.com. And on that website, you can email us podcast@travelingwiththemouse.com. You can also visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/TWTM Podcast. So for John and the absent Jason, this has been Traveling with the Mouse, and we will see you on our next trip. There's no post-roll because Jason's not here.
I was trying to think of something clever, but it was not coming to me.